Welcome to Pop Our Devolution, where four PhDs talk about stuff. My name is Juliet Levy, and I have a PhD in history.
My name is Stevie Ruiz, and I teach in Chicano Studies at Cal State Northridge. And I'm coming to you from an expertise around environmental justice, critical science studies, and comparative race and ethnicity.
Hi, my name is Hannah Cutting Jones. I am a food historian, so I have a PhD in history, and I work in food studies and global studies at University of Oregon.
My name is AJ Withers, and I have a PhD in social work. My research focuses on oppression and subordination and how to fight back.
We're discussing Marshall Mathers, or Eminem's, June 2024 video, Houdini. A few days before the video dropped, Eminem released a teaser video with magician David Blaine. Blaine eats a wine glass, and Eminem says,
"Well, for my last trick, I'm going to make my career disappear."
Houdini opens with Eminem's longtime manager, Paul Rosenberg, telling Eminem,
"I was listening to the album. Good fucking luck. You're on your own."
Alerting the viewer that there's something controversial or even cancelable about the video. What might sound like a fresh beat is a remix of the Steve Miller Band's 1982 Abracadabra. Houdini depicts the reappearance of Mathers' alter ego, Slim Shady. Shady emerges through a time portal from 2002 and shows his contempt for the world today and for contemporary Mathers. Just before the 1 minute mark of the roughly 5 minute long video, Mathers says that the old him would show up to ciphers or group freestyles with drugs and wearing a Bud Light shirt. This is the first anti-trans dog whistle. 15 seconds later, he's mocking violence against women through a pun about the gender-motivated shooting of Megan Thee Stallion. The contemporary Marshall Mathers then dresses up as Rap Boy, the superhero character from an Eminem video decades past. Mathers goes out to defeat Shady, all the while Shady and Mathers both drop offensive lyrics. When Mathers and Shady touch, the two become a single, reintegrated Eminem. This Eminem goes on to drop multiple anti-trans lyrics. Eminem tells us he's acutely aware of his problematic lyrics.
If I think that shit, I'ma say that shit. Cancel me, what? Okay, that's it.
Some of the video is self-critical, talking about his past problematic opiate use and being a
white jerk.
He even says of his adult children shown responding angrily in the video,
"Fuck my own kids, they're brats."
One of Eminem's three kids is non-binary. Eminem tells us,
"If I'm my last trick, poof, just like that, and I'm back."
10 days after release, Houdini had 65 million views on YouTube.
When I was watching this, it was this kind of late 1990s moment that he was trying to relive. And Eminem is trying to travel through time and space. And in my reading of it, my first encounter of controversy with Eminem was his kind of homophobic remarks that were made in the early 2000s, and that he tried to rectify himself through this kind of performance he did with Elton John. And I almost felt like this storyboard or story that he's trying to tell, where he's traveling back to the early 2000s and late 1990s, felt like he was trying to substitute this controversy with the once old tale of homophobia as a kind of as a signal to kind of moral panic in the US, now to this issue of transphobia, and substituting one for the other and saying that he was going to regain his kind of controversy status through that. What I also find about this as well is that it's still rooted in queerphobia, transphobia, and ridiculing and mocking trans people as the kind of new boogeyman in the room. And I think we see this in kind of different aspects in the video, where we see trans trans folks or transgender folks being mocked with beards. But also him kind of moving back and forth between his younger self and his current self. And I thought that was really compelling to see show the power of consumption in the US, in trying to shape and engineer these types of boogeymans that we have, especially around youth culture. AJ, for like the listeners, could you break down how you see transphobia playing out in the video, like, and give us some examples just so folks can break it down in their head?
Sure, and other folks can add. Absolutely. So he says the old him would wear a Bud Light shirt. The new him certainly wouldn't because Bud Light made the fatal error of giving a trans woman a branded beer with her face on in celebration of an event in her life. And so Bud Light is the enemy because they support trans people. Anything that is anything adjacent to trans people is now part of the enemy and constructed as part of like a global conspiracy to indoctrinate our children, which is doesn't exist. And trans people are constructed as groomers. He also says,
my transgender cat Siamese identifies as black but acts Chinese.
Obviously being racially evocative. And cats aren't transgender. Cats can't be transgender. Gender is socially constructed, and cats just are cats. They don't have the same kind of rigid gender binary. They just are cats. And one defense of this video that I saw was that it's not transphobic because Siamese cats are Chinese. That really loses
What?
it loses
So
the
confused.
Okay. Oh
yeah,
my
it
gosh.
loses the connection to the fact that that has nothing to do with transgender. Yeah, it's just completely irrelevant and unnecessary. He also, in a previous video years ago, he had his manager who in this video says Paul Rosenberg, who he says is on his own, his manager dressed up as Britney Spears. And he, in this video, shows a picture of him and calls him
You male cross-dresser, fake ass bitch.
and refers to RuPaul's big balls. But also, he does this thing where he says,
But I will hit an 8-year-old in the face with a participation trophy.
which is a comment on that how children are treated today. And then after that says,
I have zero doubts that this whole world's about to turn into some Girl Scouts. That censorship girls out.
sports playing, boys are transformed into girls, and this is a horrifying thing. And there is obviously like a moralism here around censorship that is the literal reading, but the reading is also an anti-trans reading. And I'd say there it's also a dog whistle to a conspiracy theory about how men are being feminized globally through chemicals in the water. The gay frogs that Alex Jones talks about. So I might be missing a couple, but
Yes.
those are some of the key
Oh, that's
ones.
plenty.
Yeah.
He's a middle-aged white guy, and he's behaving like a middle-aged white guy, sort of the worst kind, where it's like, ugh, I don't want to be told what I can and can't say. He's just sort of anti-woke, grumpy, but also a celebrity trying to sort of justify that grumpiness because he has a claim to this opinion that somehow he knows is going to be provocative. Like, he's not behaving any differently than Triumph the Insult Dog or Gene Simmons, right? He's just being an unpleasant human being. And the part that I think, I mean, there are so many things that are wrong with the lyrics in that song, on top of the fact that they're being produced by this older white guy, which is what is deeply, deeply, I think, uncomfortable with. And that, when you see where the song is now landing on billboards, that's it's just, it's there's the message, and then there's the fact that the package is problematic and that people don't care. People are going to listen to it because this is, I mean, the song isn't particular. I mean, it's no different than the original one. It's a sort of a mashup retro version of it. So it's just sort of lazy and middle-aged and bad. And then it has all these problematic aspects that AJ and Stevie have already identified.
Juliet, were you saying that, I mean, where did it land on the charts? Because I don't know.
It's
ahead.
Number one in Canada right now, but Australia, Canada, Germany, Iceland.
I listened to a couple of different clips yesterday from other podcasts, kind of analyzing this new video. And it was interesting because a couple of younger people were talking about it and saying, he's so old, he's so gross, like, why is he doing this? And they just said, nobody cares about what he thinks at this point. He's trying to be relevant again, and really nobody's listening. I mean, the charts would say differently, I guess, about that. Then I listened to a clip of a podcast where the hosts were definitely older, and they thought it was really brilliant. They thought it was really his take on that he had had all these challenges in his life, and that it was a message being given maybe to younger people to persevere, keep going, life's so rough, and look what I overcame to become this.
Oh, I mean, my God.
That was the interpretation that they had. So yeah. The other thing that I wanted to say, and then I'll turn it over to someone else, is that it really made me consider the political moment that we're in with Donald Trump, and that we're in this horrifying deja vu of the election looming. And we have someone like Eminem. I think the reason that he does appeal to younger people, if he does, to a particular group, is that he, like Trump, is admired by certain people for just saying whatever he thinks. He doesn't care what people think, right? He doesn't want to be politically correct. And he tells audiences, I don't know if it's in this song, but I've definitely heard that this sentiment, you know, take what I say with a grain of salt. Like, you know, I'm a rapper. So he kind of feels like that gives him a free pass. But I think it's interesting to consider what's going on in popular culture and politically. And we have this kind of fast-paced craziness with how much is coming at us constantly and very little thoughtful interpretation of what that means. But yeah, it's a gross kind of sexist, you know, homophobic kind of vibe that is pretty gross to see.
Eminem is doing this because, like, using cancelability as a market strategy. And that's a thing that a lot of white men are doing right now, be it Kid Rock, be it Justin Bieber, who went on the canceled tour and made millions of dollars off of this idea of being canceled. Actual people who are being canceled, like Susan Sarandon, say one thing against the genocide in Palestine and are written off by her agency. But these folks can go on the attack and actually actively work to silence people who are speaking out against genocide. I'm not saying that Eminem is doing that, but the people that are buying his albums likely are. And that side of that culture war definitely is. So Eminem, I think, says he's going to make his career disappear, and that's what Houdini is, but actually it's bringing him back. And I think that's part of what is so gross about the overtness of this. And also, I think, like, this is an attack on trans people. And as, like, a white trans person who lives in Canada, the attack on trans folks is different than in the United States, but it's very real. And it's one that I feel very acutely. But it's also one that I think is important never to lose, that the center of that attack is very much about white nationalism.
I think one of the things that it's a commentary as well is the last scene of the video. It's everyone has like these beards on, and folks that I think are even are cis or trans. And I think that, or mocking trans. And I think one of the things that I got out of it is as well is like, there's how do we regain our masculinity? But in particular, I think you hit the nail on the head about white masculinity in particular, that it's in some type of crisis. And that if we were to kind of restore this moment that we once had where he's traveling back in time, I think this whole idea of like, this imposter, and I think this thing about trans folks that you hit the nail on the head is that, you know, he uses cross-dressing interchangeably with trans, which are two different ways of being in the world. And I think one of the things that I got out of it as well is just the nature of how easy it is to ridicule people in our society and demean them and dehumanize them. But also do it at their expense or for a laugh or a brunt of a joke. And I think that's one of the things that I get out of it is that what harm will this cause? Will this cause more bullying? I think it's that relevancy factor too, that he wants to be relevant. I don't know if it's gonna work. But I think that it shows that there's a movement in popular culture trying to obtain those things.
Are we contributing to that by talking about it?
That's a part of the trap, right?
Yeah.
Is that this is exactly the feedback loop that he wants,
Right.
is the critique, the outrage. So, in part of that, I want to point out Eminem is like an outdated, ridiculous man who not only is like full of toxic masculinity, but he's just a joke as a man. And he's a caricature of himself, who's a caricature of himself. And he's profoundly pathetic. And so, in us doing this, I think it's important that we also make it clear that he is just very sad as a
Yeah.
human.
Oh, yeah.
I think you both are making some really excellent points about this. And I just wanted to say something quickly about the racial aspect of this that I think is really interesting. I'm remembering the Super Bowl halftime performance from a couple of years ago, where Eminem performs after Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and some other artists. And I believe Dr. Dre actually produced this recent music video of his. But anyway, during that, right after his set, Eminem takes a knee for about a minute, and most people read this as a sign of solidarity with Colin Kaepernick's very well-known protests against police brutality and racial injustice that have been going on, went on for several years. And I just think it's interesting how Eminem not only hides behind Slim Shady, but also hides behind these other artists, right? They all have little cameos, they're all part of this video, and it's almost like he's saying, I get a pass because these guys all support me. They help me make my quote art, and they have for years. And so overall, he seems to be positioning himself to be able to get away with some of this egregious language and messaging because he is aligning himself with some politically correct issues and with others who have taken more progressive stances.
Yeah, I
So,
mean, it all
anyway,
comes back to like, I'm just joking. It's a
Yeah,
joke. Like, I'm just, it's
it's
different.
silly.
Like, if
It's
you're upset, it's because you're
entertainment.
upset. Like, I'm sorry if you get upset about this, but I'm just joking. And,
Exactly.
I don't, again, I don't think that makes it any less terrible, but I find it so obviously, it's just an angry white guy really pissed off at the world because he's getting older and he's
Yeah.
doing whatever he can to fight time.
People also continue to point to the fact in 2013, apologizing for previous homophobic comments, he says that he supports gay, lesbian, and trans people. And then he uses the homophobic F slur in 2018 and then says, I quote, I feel like it might be too far, like right after releasing that album. So sort of walks it back a bit. So he does do this where he's like, oh, sorry, not so sorry. Oh, sorry, not so sorry. And then I just want to talk about what folks think about the fact that he is the father of a non-binary kid who appears in the video and presumably consents to appear in the video.
The ultimate excuse, right? Did he say, see, I can't possibly mean any of this.
Eminem has a black friend.
That is exactly it. Yeah.
I'm afraid we're running out of time and we have to end this first inaugural episode of Pop Hour Devolution. Why don't we give our final thoughts, let people know what we're up to, and let them know where they can find us.
My big takeaway is one of complete unsurprise in terms of how invested mainstream culture is in the gender binary and in how people really work to be relevant via and adjacent to that binary. People are fighting back, and I feel positive about that. And I think it's important that more allies support that fight. Folks can reach me through X potentially. Also, who knows? I'm also on Blue Sky, and I'll put that in the show notes. I don't know what my address is. And I will work on a podcast over the next while, sort of emerging out of my research on anti-trans organizing and its relationship to white supremacy. And I just have a new book out, Disability Politics and Theory, the revised and expanded edition through Fernwood.
Well, I think as a commentary on just popular culture, what it says about a lot of social justice issues, about you know, the state of our political, cultural, social struggles right now, it feels like a world that is completely false on so many levels and so separated from reality. That was the other thing I kept thinking about, was we have climate crises, we have all of these things that are absolutely dire circumstances, and it's like we're just drawn to escape. And I think these are interesting examples of things that straddle both escapism and being political commentary, whether they want to or not. So, but very disturbing messaging about, of course, gender and power dynamics. Plenty to think about as we think about public history and think about engaging with more of a, you know, broader audience. What I am working on currently, I am hoping to start a podcast about nutrition and about the history of nutrition in particular. I'm working on a project right now about protein and our obsession with protein, and I'm hoping to turn that into a longer research project. I'm also editing a book manuscript about my work in the Pacific Islands, looking at specifically at colonialism and decolonization and the ways in which that was kind of in name only, but looking at food dependence and also the role of religion. We could have also talked about that today as well. So people can reach me at University of Oregon. My email is hcutting@uoregon.edu. And yeah, stay tuned. Hopefully we will all be launching some exciting projects.
Awesome. I'm excited to hear all of you guys. People don't dissect these things enough. And if anything, I would like to kind of just end with the fact that this is something I intend to continue in my own podcast. And it's something that I'm interested in pursuing, especially around the housing justice issue in Los Angeles. I'm going to be completing a podcast over the summer, or at least one episode or two episodes on that I hope to launch on the housing crisis in Los Angeles. And in particular, what I'm interested in is delving into these deep questions about who is at risk around these basic needs issues, and how do these communities have provided solvable solutions to the housing crisis, but don't align with the kind of city politics around, and also asking big questions about who is profiting off of houselessness and homelessness in Los Angeles. There's billions of dollars going into the housing crisis, but much of it is allocated for temporary housing rather than permanent housing, and putting families and loved ones and pets and animals. And so those are things that I'm going to be picking up in my podcast called No Rest for the Awake. And that'll be launching at the end of summer 2024. So look out.
I teach history at the University of California, Riverside, and one of the things that I do in every class and that I focus consistently is on understand and know your sources, right? And I think one of the things that this conversation has made clear is is that I mean, I just think people don't care where their sources come from because everything has become entertainment. And so it just makes me well, it commits me to my job. I am going to continue to teach students to question the sources and question why they get what they get in their feeds. It has not made me, I do not stand for M&M, I believe, in order to use sort of that circular thing. And you can reach me at my name, juliet@ucr.edu. And you can find me, I'm still on X, Prof. Juliet. I don't know how much longer I'll be there. Just come see me. Today's episode was made as part of the National Humanities Center Podcasting Institute in June 2024. It was produced and edited by AJ Withers with the help of Pamela Latch and Patrick Flanagan. Theme music is Opinions by Anthony Cooper under Creative Commons 4.0.